Samuel 20. Jonathan helps David again. So Saul has just been waylaid by the Holy Spirit, manifesting his power on them. Is this unusual or is this unusual that the Lord would do this? I mean, the Spirit would come on people and actually stop them from doing harm to somebody else and give people the word of the Lord in the process. I mean, this blows my mind. I would like to see some of this, more of this happening. So David fled from Naoth and Ramah. Remember, they're right next to each other, because Ramah is a city and Naoth is right next to it, like a little village there. So it's kind of like Ramah's counting like the area round about it. And he went and said to Jonathan, he says, "What have I done?" He says, "What is my iniquity? What is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" Now, what's happening here is that, and I should have highlighted this on the notes, is that this is the beginning. Chapter 20, verse 1, is the beginning of a negative season. David's beginning his first season of fear and unbelief right now. And it goes on for a couple chapters here. Actually, chapter 20 and 21. He is really down in the dumps, and he's going to start doing some negative stuff here. I mean, some unbelief stuff is what I mean. So that starts in chapter 20 and 21. Then he rebounds again in chapter 23, and he goes and attacks a city, and then he goes back into the slump again. So he kind of rebounds in 23, but he's in his first slump right here, his first time. He just had a supernatural intervention in 1924. I mean, not that date, but chapter 19, verse 24. Okay, the next verse, he's in a tailspin. Which, remember, it could have been months later, weeks later, days later. You never know how these things happen just exactly. Okay, now the question that the scholars ask is, should David have stayed with Samuel? Pink makes that point. That's kind of a common point. Why is he leaving from Naoth and Ramah? Why is he leaving the prophet Samuel? Well, one answer is maybe David didn't want Samuel to get killed, because Saul would have come after both of them. Like, for instance, he killed the priest at the city of Nob because they helped David. And so the same thing would have happened to Samuel. So should David have stayed with Samuel? It's hard to know for sure, but he flees anyway, and he takes off, and he goes into a tailspin. Maybe he should have. That's, you know, folks will debate that. You know, if you want to be real kind of spiritual, go to your home group and just say, you know, I don't buy this, him fleeing from Ramah and going, you know, to the wilderness of Ziph. And they'll go, huh? Say, well, you know, I mean, it's standard stuff. He should have stayed there. Do I think Samuel told him to? I might have, but he goes into such a negative season of unbelief. And then in chapter 22:5, the prophet Gad comes on the scene and says, get back to Judah. You know, where are you at? Go back to the land. So because that was the prophetic word from the prophet Gad in 22:5, my presupposition is he's wrong by leaving. You know, at least leaving and going over to the Philistines area. So anyway, just note this, chapter 20, 21, and even some of 22, a little bit of 22, he's kind of in a slide here. It's his first negative slide. Okay, so he meets Jonathan, and he's really starting to get sad. He goes, you know, what have I done? What is my iniquity? What is my sin before your father that he's trying to... He goes, I'll repent of it. Jonathan says, by no means, you shall not die. Jonathan literally ends up with more faith than David. At the end of chapter 23, he tells him that again. He says, David, you can't die. He goes, look me in the eyes. You're the king of Israel. He goes, I want to be your helper. He tells him that in chapter 23. I don't know the exact verse, but we'll get to it in a little while. 23:16. Thank you. I appreciate that. He says, you can't die. You're the king of Israel. I mean, Jonathan knew it, Saul knew it, and we find out later in 2 Samuel 5 when Abner, Saul's main general, you know, his Schwarzkopf guy, he comes up and says, I got out of Vietnam and moved on. And just want you guys to know I'm contemporary. I could say Haiti, but I don't know enough about it. It's only a day or two old. But Abner comes. I always want to call him Avner now. You know, I used to call Avner Abner. Now I'm doing it the other way around. For those of you who know who Avner here, Bosky. But Abner comes to him and says, in 2 Samuel 5, when he wants to bring all of Israel over, he says, we knew you were the anointed one. That verse like really makes me mad. When I read that, I go, this makes me so mad. Why wasn't you with him then? I want to shake Abner. He says, we all knew you were the anointed one prophesied by the prophets. Does that make you mad? Anyway, that's 3 weeks from now, so I'll hold it till then. But anyway, that is really irritating. But Jonathan knows it. Saul knows it. The whole nation knows it. So, verse 3, David took an oath again and said, your father certainly knows I have found favor in your eyes. He has said, don't tell Jonathan anything, but as truly as the Lord lives, as your soul lives, listen, here's the beginning of it. There's only a step between me and death. This is like bad news. David says, I am going to die. God has said I would be king. I don't believe it anymore. David's humanity is showing up here. You know, what about what happened in chapter 19, verse 24? Just what about, wait, David, when they all came after to arrest you, the spirit of prophecy stopped them. Saul stopped, took his clothes off and laid 24 hours naked on the ground. David, God is helping you. No, I'm going to die. There's only a step between me and death. It's over. You know, Elijah said the same thing. Had this great victory at Mount Carmel, and then this lady's real mad at him, and he says, I'm going to die. You know, Peter, same thing. I think Pink makes that point about Peter, that great victories, and then the little teenage gal comes up to him and says, are you the Lord's disciple? No, I don't know what you mean, and starts cursing. And so here's David. I mean, after this great seasons of victory, he's getting weary, he's running, he's bummed out, he's troubled. And, you know, what about chapter 16, 13? Samuel called you the prophet. The Spirit came on you. What about chapter 13, 14, where God rejected Saul and started talking about you? Well, I don't know. It's over. He's defeated. And Jonathan doesn't like this. He says, you're going to be king. He goes, I'm not taking this. So just know that some of the most anointed people in the world I think they all do. They spin out into these seasons of their humanity, and that's part of the reason why the wilderness season's there. Because when they become king, when the promises are fulfilled, they know their own soul. It's documented to them and their covenant friends. Because Jonathan could have come to him and says, David, I remember you wasn't like the man of power for the hour. I remember you were ready to jump off the cliff, man. Write your biography straight, David. I remember I was there. And part of this is to document the humanity and humility so that there's reality in it in the days to come. Jonathan said to David, whatever you yourselves desire, I will do for you. He goes, I'll do anything. He says, here's what I want you to do. He goes, tomorrow is the new moon, and I'm supposed to sit with the king because it's a feast day. Let me go that I may hide in the field until the third day. Now, David is going to ask Jonathan to tell a deliberate lie. David tells several lies in a row here, by the way. Yeah, you know that? He does. He tells several, one really disastrous one that causes the death of 85 priests as well as a bunch of other of their family members and everything. So he goes, go tell your dad that I had to go, verse 6, go to Bethlehem because there was this big family reunion there and my dad Jesse insisted on that I come back. I'm adding a little to that. And all that kind of stuff. And so he does that. Let's skip a little space here for time's sake. Okay, so then verse 15, they make a covenant together. Verse 15 and 16, Jonathan and David reinstate their covenant again. Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. Verse 17, Jonathan again calls David to vow. He says, I want your vow. I know who you are. You are the anointed king of Israel, whether you know it or not. But I want you to vow because he loved him. For he loved him as he loved his own soul. What a great sentence. Now, this vow has a application in 2 Samuel 9. After Jonathan dies, we've talked about this before, it's years later, David says, is there anybody in Saul's house anywhere left? You know, I mean, Jonathan's house. They go, yes, he has a young son named Mephibosheth. And David went and took Mephibosheth. He was crippled, and he took care of him all of his life because of this vow. So this 2 Samuel 9, David fulfills his vow to the end, which is really, really neat. Okay, so what happens is that there's this, they have this agreement, shooting these arrows and these things. Anyway, it's their communication system, which is not that important for tonight because we've got some more stuff to go. Okay. Basically, what happens is Jonathan goes and he puts on this show for Saul and says, David, do this and that. And if Saul gets mad, then Jonathan's going to communicate to David, you better run for your life. And Saul did get mad, and he said some really mean things to Jonathan. He said, you cursed son of a crazy woman or something. I mean, he really lays it, you know, actually says something just like that, actually harder than that. against Jonathan, his mother, and just everything else, and says, "What are you doing? Don't you know the son of Jesse is going to take your position?" And he says, "Dad, it's not my position, it's God's." He didn't really say that, but he should have. Jonathan and David, they know there's trouble, and they know that it's going to be over real soon. Okay. David's flight from Saul. So David knows it's over. David knows that Saul is going to chase him because Saul told Jonathan that. And so David now goes to the city of Nob. He's taking off. Okay, Roman numeral 1, David at Nob, Gath, and Adullam. Gath is the bad one because Gath is a Philistine city. Gath is, he's joining the other team to be safe from Saul because he didn't think Saul would go over there because he knew Saul was afraid of the Philistines. So he goes over to the Philistines, but that's an interesting story in itself. Okay, now the city of Nob is the city where the tabernacle of Moses was. So that's where the big religious center of Israel is, in essence, because the tabernacle's there, the priests are there. So David came to Nob to Ahimelech, the priest, which is the high priest of the nation, by the way. And Ahimelech was afraid when he met David. He's thinking, "Why are you coming here?" He said, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" Because Ahimelech knows that Saul is upset at David. The whole nation knows it. I mean, Saul's been using 3,000 men. Remember the salary for 3,000 men, the servants it takes to transport, to feed them. The movement of 3,000 people from one place to another, plus all their salaries, is extremely expensive on the tax revenue. The whole nation knows something bizarre is going on. Ahimelech is very afraid when David comes. He goes, "Why are you here?" He goes, "Give it to me straight." David lies to him. And one of the projected reasons that David's there is that a number of times in the book of Psalms, David longed for the ark of the Lord, didn't he? Because the ark of God, which is a piece of furniture that's in the tabernacle, the ark of God is, it's about the size of one of these tables is how big the ark is. But it's where the presence of God dwelt. Because the presence of God was on the ark of God in the Old Testament. And in the New Testament, we are the ark of God. I mean, we are the temple. The Spirit of God lives in every one of us, which is immeasurably better than the old. But David had this passion to be where the presence of God was. So here he is, very discouraged, very despondent. He thinks it's over. I'm going to die. My theory is he wants to go be by the tabernacle. Because many of his psalms reference this. I think he wants to get counsel from the high priest as well. And he knows he can get food there, but he could have got food from several places because he had friends. He was the national hero of the nation. They would have probably given him all the food he wanted and asked him for his autograph. I mean, he was the national hero, so he could have got probably food and weapons in a number of places. Pink says he went to Nob to get food and weapons. I think he could have got them anywhere. I think he went there because the ark was there and the high priest was there who had the Urim and the Thummim, which we described earlier, which was a way to tell God's will if it was a yes or no question. You could ask a yes or a no and you could get the sense of what God's heart was. And the high priest had that prophetic the ephod with the Urim and the Thummim in it, in the pockets of them. They were like stones or something. No one's perfectly sure how it worked. So David came to the city of Nob. Ahimelech is scared. "Why are you there?" He goes, "Man, I don't know." David's weary. He's got fear. He's worn out by the conflict. Any of you ever had a season where you're just tired of all the conflict, right? David is like really tired. He's been dodging swords, hearing slander against him in the court. The captains hear stories, all these bizarre things. He's just getting tired of it. So he's wearing down. So David told Ahimelech the priest, "The king has ordered me on some business." "Not." And said to him, "Do not let anyone know anything about the business which I've sent you." This is a total lie. This is a disastrous lie. It's going to cause the death of an entire city. At least it's a small city, but I mean, a lot of people, 85 priests and their families are going to get killed because of this lie. And this is what would have happened to Samuel, I believe, if Samuel would have stayed with David. "Now therefore, what food do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand or whatever can be found." Okay, David, what's wrong? It's not okay just to trust in God in the good times. I mean, David could trust in God when the going was good. It was always going good so far. But he's in the season of his life where God's saying, "Can you trust me in the bad times? I mean, can you trust me when the anointing's there, or can you trust me when nothing's happening?" This is a whole different chapter in the Holy Spirit seminary in David's life. Because David was pretty good trusting God when the momentum was there and when things were exploding. But God wanted a man on the throne of Israel that was stable in all the seasons, not just the seasons where everything was breaking forth. He wanted a man stable when adversity came, when the Lord maybe wanted to teach the whole nation a lesson in faith. And David was not stable in this yet. And the Lord, because he was thinking of Israel, was building this into the life of David. So the priest said to David, "There's no common bread on hand, but there's holy bread, if the young men have kept themselves from women." And so David answered the priest and said, "Truly, women have been kept from us for 3 days. There could be no sexual relations before they had consecrated bread." That's a requirement in Exodus 19, verse 15. There were certain requirements about eating the consecrated bread for the priesthood. Well, David's not even a priest. But Jesus picks up on this in Matthew chapter 12, verse 1 to 7. He picks up on this. The Pharisee, because when Jesus was healing on the Sabbath, this is what he refers to. And the principle is this: the rituals, certain rituals, now again, not breaking of the types and shadows. That was different, as we talked about earlier. Moses can't hit the rock twice. You know, a king can't act like a priest. But some of the religious rituals were for the purpose of holiness in life. And so what Jesus says in Matthew 12, he says, if somebody's dying, you don't keep a rule that has no moral value to it. It's not a moral rule. It was a ritual rule. You don't keep a rule and let somebody die, because the rules of God bring life. And it's dumb to have somebody die keeping a rule. So he goes, I can heal this guy on the Sabbath because it's bringing life. The reason that God gave the Sabbath was for life, not for rule's sake. So he said, how about the time David went to the city of Nob and took the consecrated bread from the priest? And it was not proper, but it was saving the life of and God's purpose. So Jesus actually validated this breach of etiquette, so to speak. Okay, so that's verse 7. So a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite. Yeah, just everyone go boo. Boo. Okay, good. His name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul. He took care of the sheep and the herd. Now, an Edomite is from Esau, like the Amalekites. This is a cousin, a first cousin of the Amalekites. These guys are not good. Whenever the Amalekites or the Edomites, those are the two key family lines that come from Esau. Remember, Jacob got the promise, Esau didn't. Esau's descendants are Edomites and Amalekites. And they always speak of the flesh that didn't care about the covenant of God. They'd rather fill their pleasure and their passion, their physical passions, than obey the covenant of God. That's an Edomite. That's an Amalekite. So when you have an Edomite anywhere in Scripture, I don't think there's any fail. It's always negative and destructive. So when you read that an Edomite, you go, uh-oh. One more time. Ooh, there you go. Verse 8. We've done it now for the night. Don't do it again. Okay, no. Verse 8. David said to Ahimelech, "Is there not on hand a spear or a sword? I have brought neither sword nor spear weapons with me, because the king's business was required haste. I was in a hurry." He goes, which is a lie. So the priest said, with the sword of Goliath. Now they put it in there. They kept it by the ark like a monument, because that was like the ark is the main piece of furniture in the nation. And so the sword of Goliath is like the monument in the trophy case. I mean, they got it there. They said, well, the sword of Goliath. He goes, you know, we don't have swords, because remember, they didn't have iron. They were just in the Iron Age. The Philistines had a monopoly on all the iron, and the Israelites didn't know how to use it yet. It was just the reign of David where iron was becoming common in Israel. It wasn't yet. So a sword was an unusual piece of equipment, because they normally had spears. They had some shields, and they'd have spears and you know, things like that. But, I mean, a real good sword was a real blessing to run into one of those in Israel. He said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistines, whom you killed. Remember, David, you were anointed of God. Like, what are you doing right now, is what his conscience might have been saying. You killed him in the Valley of Elah. There it is, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, then take it, for there's no other except it. And David said, there's none like it. Give it to me. I like that. I go, wow. I mean, I remember, I don't really remember how big it was, but his sword was like giant. This guy was 9'6". Remember, his shield was 120 pounds. the tip of his spear weighed 15 pounds. I mean, this sword might have, I mean, this wouldn't have been, you know, you could like drag this thing with you or melt it down and make two swords. But this, he said, there is none like it. I can see David with his big old grin on his face. Wow, hot dog. You know, there's no sword like this one. And so now David is trusting in the sword that could not protect Goliath. Now that's the irony. The very sword that Goliath said, I come to you with my sword. And David says, well, I don't come with the sword. I come in the name of the Lord. The very sword David is confronting in a time of despair right now. And he's going to take the sword that he told Goliath not to trust in, and he's going to trust in it. Because he's not really in fellowship with God. I don't mean he's totally against God, but he's not in communion with God right now. His faith is gone, fear is dominating him, and he's on the run. So now he's trusting in the very sword that he told Goliath not to trust in. David arose and fled that day before Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. That's bad. This is real bright bad, on your Bible right there or on your notes or something. Gath is the Philistine city. There's five main Philistine cities that are all on the west coast of Israel in that day. Five Philistine cities. Each city had its own king. There was a coalition of kings, of the five kings. They made up the nation of the Philistines. They were like five separate little kingdoms that had a coalition that worked together in unity against Israel. So he goes to Gath. Like, why Gath? I mean, Gath is where Goliath was from. He's got Goliath's sword on his belt going to Gath. And the reason he's going to Gath, although he should have went to one of the other ones, is because he knows Saul is so afraid of the Philistines. Because whenever there was a battle, Saul kind of like stayed at the back and said, charge, boys. And Saul wouldn't really get in the thick of the battle. Saul didn't like that. He had a fear deal going on here because the Spirit of God has left him. So David thinks, if I go to Gath, Saul will never chase me. So David's trusting in the walls of Gath instead of in the hand of God. Do you see what's happening? He says, God can't keep me in Israel, but the heathen king, the idolatrous king, can protect me, and God can't. This is like really bad what's happening here. This is not good. He's forsaking the land of Israel. He's forsaking the covenant people. Okay, B, David pretends insanity at Gath. He's going to act like a madman, it says. So the servants of Achish, the king, said, is this not David? They recognized him by face. I mean, David was on USA Today cover everywhere. I mean, everybody knew David. They went, we remember that little redhead little guy, you know, that with that ruddy complexion, because he looked different than some of the other Jewish soldiers there. They go, we remember you in the Valley of Elah. And David's going, oh, no. He goes, this fame is bringing me down. And because it was, it didn't work for him. Didn't they sing to you, those dancers that Saul sang thousands and you killed the 10,000s? David goes, that song got over here too. He goes, oh no. He goes, it caused me so much trouble back home. That song got over, it made a big hit overseas, you know. I mean, it was over in the Philistine nation, heard of the song. I mean, it was all over the nations there. They knew who David was. David took these words to heart. He heard like song. What song? He goes, no, I don't remember that song. He goes, oh yeah, it was you. And he goes, no. Oh, you know what? There's this other guy named David. He goes, oh, the Goliath guy. Yeah, I remember. And David took these words to heart, and he was very much afraid of Achish. And remember, he's got Goliath's sword on his side. I mean, this is when his fame is not working for him, right? So he changed his behavior before them. This is horrible. He feigned or he faked madness before them. He scratched on the doors of the gate. He let his saliva fall down his beard. So he grabbed, and he rolled on the ground. And Achish looks at the other guys and goes, well, what do you think? They go, death is too good for him. Get rid of him, man. He goes, what on earth? They were blown away. I mean, this is one of the bizarrest. David, remember, he's not in a good time right now. Things are going bad for David. He scratches on the door, spits on his beard, frosts on the floor. Achish said to his servants, look, you see the man is insane. Why did you bring an insane person to me? Have I need of madmen that you brought him to buy? I'm the king of this. Of course, it was only a city. He says, don't even let this guy come in my house. He goes, get rid of him. Now, what's interesting, and we can't take time for this, Psalm 34 is written right here. And Psalm 34 is one of the top 10 lists of the Psalms. David does this and then writes Psalm 34. It says, when he feigns madness before Achish, king of Gath. This is the one where he tells the Lord, Lord, I've got to trust you. And he even talks about it in verse 11 about lying lips. He goes, deliver me from lying lips. Because what happened? He's running from Saul in the city of Nob. Right? That's what's going on here. David asked in Psalm 34:11, deliver me from lying lips, because where he just came from was the city of Nob, where he lied, and a whole city is going to get wiped out. So Psalm 34, I wish we had time to look at it. It's written here. It's really powerful if you read it in this context. Okay, 1 Samuel 22, verse 1, David's 400 men at the cave of Adullam. David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. I think that David wrote Psalm 34 and was making a recovery, is what was happening. I think that he was saying yes back to the Lord, although he's going to have a negative time again. But he said yes to the Lord in Psalm 34. It says, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise will be in my mouth. I think he restored his communion with God at the end of 21, when he wrote chapter 21, when he wrote Psalm 34. David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Now he's back in Israel. This is good. He's back in the land of Judah. He's back. So the fact that he left Gath and came to Adullam, that's the land of Judah, this is very good. Very, very good. Thank you, David. And I think he's repented in Psalm 34 and he's come back. Okay, the other two psalms that are written here, and probably several psalms are written here, you know, we don't have the information to know where all of David's 60 or 70 or 80 or 90 psalms, I don't know the exact number, I don't know the number of them. He didn't write all of them. Maybe two-thirds of them. Maybe 90 or 100 of them. I'm not sure. But some of them were written places that nobody knows. So I'm assuming several more were written in this period for sure. But certainly many of the seeds of his psalms were in his heart in this hour. But Psalm 57 and Psalm 142 are written at the cave of Adullam. If you get that down and read it, Psalm 57, Psalm 142, powerful psalms. You get so much more insight when you know he's just come out of Nob, the despair that was on him, Gath. He's repented. He's come back to the land of Israel. He says, okay, I'll face my enemy. I'll meet God and face the enemy. Chapter 21, verse 1 basically means I'm coming back to Israel and I'm going to trust God. So that's what it means when he came to the cave of Adullam, because that's Israel again. Okay, Psalm 57, Psalm 142. His brothers and his father heard of it. They went down to him. I like that. I really like that. Now, David's beginning his next season, quote, in the Spirit, his next prophetic season. It's now the training, it's the rallying of an army and the training them and finding God as his source. Because his army, David has found God as his source for the most part, although he stumbles some more. But his army has gathered to him because they want David to meet their needs. The army doesn't have root in God. If something goes wrong, they just lose all their zeal for God. They don't have rootedness in the Lord yet, which is okay for people to be that way, but it's not a place of maturity. It's okay in the sense we want people to grow out of that to where they're not looking to a man to make them happy, but God. They live before God. When difficulty happens, they look at God in the face and say, I trust you, God. I'm not unnerved because I'm being tried and tested like everybody else on the planet Earth is. But I know you're real. Your word is real. That's what's happening in the season of Adullam. Okay, David, God could have wiped out Saul and put David on the throne, but God says, no, more training. More training. I've got to train you in the wilderness. So that's what's going on. So his family comes to him. Everyone, if you remember, that's in the three D's, in distress, in debt, and discontented. You could have added dysfunctional in there too, I'm sure, with our language today. Gathered to him, and he became captain over this band of outlaws. So they're in debt. They're not paying their taxes, or they're not paying their neighbors. So they took out some loans, or they owe the government, and they just left. I mean, that's the kind of army you want, right? You know, they got in debt and they just took off. They're discontent with the government. They're discontent with God. They're discontent with their family. And they're in distress. They're probably real discouraged. It's a really bad beginning. But David takes them. And what's awesome is they become transformed into people who have their root in God. And they become the mighty army of God. They become the mighty men of David in chapter 2 Samuel 22 and 23. Second, at the very end of the life story, they put the record of the mighty men of David, they call them. They are the ones that were with him in the cave of Adullam in the early days. This band of outlaws, most of them were young men. David's probably 25 or 24 right now. It's a group of, probably most of them are young men. I like to go to different places, and sometimes I'll talk to the youth at conferences. I call it, you know, a real bizarre youth group. I mean, they're all mad and angry and bummed out and dysfunctional. And David is a young man, and they're transformed into a mighty army of God. I mean, that's what really happened. But it's really a real, it's a youth group thing that's happening right here. It really is. Because it's mostly young people. I'm assuming because of David's being so young himself. My question is, where is Jonathan at? Why isn't Jonathan in Adullam? Where are the others? Where are the other captains that, you know, that followed David when he became king? They said, oh, we remember you. You were the anointed one. You led us back then. They chose the courts of Saul over the David's cave. They wanted Saul's comfort and not the will of God, or not the purpose of God. Let's put it that way. They would rather have Saul's court without the purpose of God than David's cave with all the hassles, because when God is raising up the David band, it's always in the wilderness. It's always in Adullam. It's always training them under hardship. And a lot of folks just rather stay in Saul's camp. They just don't want to mess around with the cave of Adullam. But that is where the army's formed. Jesus, Hebrews 13:13 talks about it. It says, going outside the camp. Going outside of just the normal orthodoxy of what's happening. Not that our goal is to be unorthodox. Just that in the wilderness is where God trains His army, always. And it's tough. I mean, they're discontent, angry, hurt, no one's trained yet. Our people's root isn't in God. They're easily offended. Then David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. There is a Mizpah of Israel as well, but this is Mizpah of Moab. There's two Mizpahs. That's why they call it Mizpah of Moab, because the other one's just Mizpah. And he said to the king of Moab, Let my father and my mother come with you till I know what God will do for me. I like that phrase, till I know what God will do. He goes, I don't know what's happening. He goes, I just had a bad year in Gath. I just spit and flopped and, you know, freaked out. And then I'm really hard with the Lord again. I don't know what God's going to do with me. I don't know where I'm at yet. Would you take care of my parents? Because what's happening is in 2 Samuel 23, this is again at the end of the record, verse 13-17. 2 Samuel 23, 13-17. The Philistines have, when David's in the cave of Adullam, the Philistines have come in and they've conquered Bethlehem. That's where his parents live, right? Now, you don't know that if you don't read, you know, way at the end of the story, when it's just giving a general overall record. When David was in Adullam, it says the Philistines came in and took Bethlehem. So David's in Adullam, so we know who's at Bethlehem. The Philistines are. And mom and dad and the little brother, oh, and he's the little brother, but the five brothers that didn't go to war, they're all in Bethlehem. So David, I mean, he's the youngest of the family. Here he's coming. He goes, I'll take care of you. I mean, the Spirit of God is with me. So he goes over to the king of Moab. I mean, here's his 25-year-old kid. Says, hi, king of Moab. My name is David. Hey, would you take care of my family for a little while? You know, Saul, you know, your neighboring king is really mad at me right now. And the Philistines are in my hometown and messing everything up. Could you take care of me? And that's what it looks like. But it's a little bit more intense than that. Because who was David's father? Who remembers? Jesse. Okay, who is David's grandfather? Obed. Who is David's great-grandmother? Ruth, right, from Moab. And so, just two or three generations ago, Ruth was David's great-grandmother. It says that Ruth beget Obed, Obed beget Jesse, and Jesse, David. So, he goes to Moab where Ruth was. She was well-known in Moab and says, hey, my great-grandmother was from here. She's a national hero. He goes, yeah, we know. We know all the whole story. Would you take care of her grandchildren, which are my parents? And the king says, yes. So, that's what's going on there. The king of Moab is doing a favor to a very famous woman in Israel. Her grandparents, which are David's parents, Jesse and Mrs. Jesse. Okay. Verse 4. So that's what's going on here. Also, I have to throw in this because it's so interesting, though I'm definitely out of time. I have to throw in, which we always are, that also in 2 Samuel 23, what happens when David's in the cave of Adullam? That's when that great story is happening where the Philistines are at Bethlehem and David says, man, I'm thirsty. Remember that story? And three men said, they said, Iker, he's thirsty. Let's go. And David said, because David's family well was in Bethlehem, right? And David's just sitting there in the cave, not far from Bethlehem. I mean, just a few miles away, saying, boy, he goes, I love my family well. The Philistines are there. I grew up on that well. So these three men broke through the Philistine line, went and got water from the well, brought it back to David. And David, as we'll look at the whole story, says, I can't drink this because I didn't want you risking your life. And he poured it out before the Lord. He says, this is your lives. I could only offer something this precious to God. And that's a story that is a picture of even Jesus Christ. And it's even the servants of Jesus Christ, that we have served God and we come back to Jesus and Jesus offers us to God the Father. He says, Father, their loyalty to me, I give it to you. And so there's a whole thing we'll look at when we get there about the men that broke through. But this is in the days of Adullam. This is the Adullam days that this is going on. So he brought them before the king of Moab, where they dwelt all the time of David in the stronghold. Now here's a key prophecy. The prophet Gad said to David, do not stay in the stronghold, but depart. Go to the land of Judah. He says, go to the land of Judah. So David departed and went into the forest of, however you say that. Okay, verse 6. So Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered. Now Saul was staying in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, and with a spear in his hand, and his servants were standing around him. Now Gibeah and Ramah were right next door to each other. Ramah is where Saul lived. Gibeah is where Ramah is where Samuel lived, and Gibeah is where Saul lived. And so he's right there next to Ramah, right up there. And Saul said to the servants who stood about him, now hear you Benjaminites. He's kind of yelling at him. He says, will the son of Jesse, that's David, will he give you guys fields and vineyards and make you captains? He says, listen, you Benjaminites. He said, I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. You're from the tribe of Benjamin. I'm the king. He goes, I'm the one that's going to take care of you. He goes, because people in a tribe, they were all cousins and second cousins and third cousins and friends of friends, you know. Aunt Myrtle was over there and her kids were over there. And so when a person was famous in a tribe, like a king, that tribe got all the favors, all of them, of land and property. They got all the high positions in the army. You know, because, you know, the lady that grew up down the street, she goes, you know, my son Billy, are you going to put Saul, are you going to forget him? Okay, I'll make him a captain over there. And so when a guy was king, the whole tribe got favors, for real. I mean, this really, really happened. And so that's what Benjamin, that's what he's saying. He goes, you sons of Benjamin, he goes, the son of Jesse, which is David, he's from Judah. He goes, if he becomes king, he's going to take your positions and give them to people from Judah. Because his aunt Hilda, too, has got friends that's got friends. And you're going to all be displaced. Why aren't you helping me kill him? Why are you being nice to him? That's what he's saying to her. He says he's hyper paranoid in verse 8. He says, all of you have conspired against me. And the Benjaminites guys go, no, we haven't. He goes, you're all against me. There is no one who helps me. I mean, this guy's got like major pity here. He goes, no one even tells me my son Jonathan has a covenant with this kid. He goes, Jonathan, my own son, is in covenant with my number one enemy. He goes, how can this be? There is not one of you who is sorry for me. I mean, doesn't this make you want to do something like negative? And he goes, no one is sorry for me. No one tells to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me. He goes, my son Jonathan has stirred him up to lie in wait as it is to this day. He's portraying David as lying in wait out there waiting to ambush him, like he's scared and he can't even go to the store and back because he might get ambushed. You know, and he goes, even my son, I mean, it just makes you mad. Okay. B, Doeg says, the Edomite. Remember the Edomite. Ooh. Okay, we did it again. So then he answered Doeg, the Edomite speaks up, who is set over the servants of Saul, you know, the herdsmen. He said, I saw the son of Jesse going to the city of Nob. He goes, I know where he went. And he inquired of the Lord. In other words, he went to the high priest Ahimelech and said, Ahimelech, seek God for me. And he got provisions, and I saw him. He even gave him the sword of Goliath. Saul goes, no. He goes, yes. He goes, I saw it. I was there. He goes, you can trust me. By the way, what's my reward? So verse 11, the king, he's going to command the killing of all the priests. That's what's happening next in C here. So the king went and called Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all of his father's house, and the priests who were with him, and they came to the king. Saul said, I think angry, upset, hear now, you son of Ahitub, instead of Ahimelech, he says, he's addressing him in a way that is not friendly. And Ahimelech says, here I am. He says, why have you conspired against me? He's got this conspiracy complex. You and the son of Jesse. He won't call him David. He just calls him the son of Jesse every time. He says, and that you have given him bread sword, you've sought God, you've had a prayer meeting for him, that he should rise up against me to lie in wait as it is to this day. He won't drop this deal that David's ambushing him. I mean, he's telling the story to everyone. He goes, the guy is waiting for me behind a rock. He goes, he's going to kill me and everyone's against me. Of course, we know none of this is true. But we do know what is true. Saul is fulfilling the prophecy. He is troubling Israel. Remember when Samuel said, this guy will cause trouble for Israel. If you want him, you can have him. He is starting to trouble Israel right now in a big way. So, because he's going to kill all the priests, and I mean, the main priest, you know, at the city of Nob. And so Ahimelech answered the king and said, who among all your servants is as faithful as David? He goes, what are you talking about? Ambushing you on the way to the store. He's not ambushing you. The guy serves you. Everybody knows it. I mean, the Philistines know it. The Moabites know it. Everybody knows David's the main guy who fights your battles. He honors you. He speaks well of you. He goes, he's your son-in-law. He goes at your bidding. I love that. He goes, everyone knows his servant's heart. He'll do the menial task. He'll run errands for you. There's no one like him in the nation. Who is as honorable as David in your house? Who would run errands for you with his kind of prominence? The whole nation knows his heart. Did I begin to inquire of God? Did I just begin to inquire of God for him? This is a good answer. He goes, you think I just started praying for you and David and the rest of you? Far be it. He goes, I've been praying for you guys all the time. He goes, let not the king impute any kind of conspiracy to me or to my house. Your servant knew nothing. I don't know anything of this conspiracy thing. He goes, of course I pray for David. I pray for you all the time. The king says, you shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house. Isn't that chilling? He goes, you will die because you gave him that sword and gave him some bread. Then the king said to the guard who stood about him, kill all the priests of the Lord because their hand is with David. They knew when he fled. They didn't send messengers to tell me. But the servants of the king said, no way. We are not killing the priests of the Lord. You can kill us. We are not killing the priests of the Lord. They said, we're not going to do it. We'll die first because it would mean death to them. I don't think they died. It doesn't say they did. But that's what happens if you said no to a king. And that, you know, 1,000 years B.C., a king's word was final word. He had power of life and death. The king said to Doeg, you turn and kill him. So Doeg the Edomite, this is Esau. He turned and he struck the priest. He killed on that day 85 men who wore a linen ephod, which means had the priest garments on. That's all that. That's just a phrase. Everybody understands that phrase. Who wore the linen ephod means that's the garments of a priest. And except for Abiathar, which is we're going to hear, one got away. Now, interesting enough, now this is God working everything out anyway. There was a solemn judgment on Eli's house. Remember Eli? Eli was the old guy when Samuel was a boy. Eli was the old guy who sons sinned and the whole nation was corrupt. And so it's bizarre how God is allowing a demonized king to fulfill the word of God. Except for one person, Abiathar escapes. Abiathar is the last person of the house of Eli. The last person. Then he betrays David at the very end and Solomon kills him at the very end. So then the final judgment on Eli's house. That's in chapter 2, verse 31 to 36, if you could follow all that. Chapter 2, verse 31 to 36, chapter 3, verse 12 to 14. Also Nob, the city of the priest, he struck with the edge of the sword men and women, children, nursing infants, oxen, donkey, sheep, with the edge of the sword. You know what this sounds like? It sounds like what God told Saul to do to the Amalekites, he's doing to the priests. Saul would not fully do this to the Amalekites, but he did it to his own priests. To his own priests. These were the priests of the nation of which Saul was the shepherd of the nation. This sounds like the mandate of 1 Samuel 15. I mean, that old Edomite would do it. Now, one of the sons of Ahimelech, his name was Abiathar. Abiathar is a guy that shows up a lot in David's life after this. Abiathar, that's a good name to remember. He escaped and he fled after David. Now, Psalm 52 is written here. When Psalm 52 is written after the priests of Nob are slain and Abiathar escapes, that's what Psalm 52 is written. So, I've already given you several Psalms now, 34, 59, 142, and 52 here. So go back and over the week and read them. They will make so much more impact if you read them in this context. So Abiathar escapes. He's the new high priest. His father, Ahimelech, is killed. He becomes automatically the new high priest. And he brought the Urim and the Thummim and the linen ephod of the high priest with him. I'm adding that because that's, I mean, we know that from later on in the story. Abiathar told David, Saul killed the Lord's priest. David said to Abiathar, I knew it. I knew it when Doeg was there. I knew it. Why did I do this? He goes, I've caused the death of your whole house. I like it how he did not say like Saul, the people did. He didn't say Saul killed your people. He said, I killed your people. That's one of the great qualities of David. He took full responsibility. He did. I mean, Saul killed the people. I mean, in one way, David didn't. I mean, David didn't make a angry man kill the whole. But David says, no, I did it. This is my act. I take full responsibility. Then he says, stay with me. Do not fear, for who seeks my life seeks your life, but you shall be safe. It's like I'd say, well, David, you know, your credibility isn't that high right now. but that's not really going on there. And so let's get through chapter 23 real fast here. Roman numeral 3. I can't afford to get behind because I'll just skip stuff here. They told David, saying, look, the Philistines are fighting at Keilah. That's how you say it, Keilah. And they're robbing the threshing floor. So the Philistines are moving in at Keilah, which is the region of Judah. That's David's territory. These are David's cousins and stuff, or whatever, because they're all from the tribe of Judah. The Philistines have broken in. Therefore, David asked the Lord, shall I go and attack the Philistines? The Lord said to David, go and attack at Keilah. Now, Keilah was a fortified town, which means it was like a military fort was there. I mean, a mini version of a... There's a number of fortified towns, and they would attack a fortified town because they took that, then they could take all the villages without any hassle. So, you know, like in the Wild West, if they took the fort town, then they could take the whole region. So that's what's going on at Keilah. Now, David's operating under the prophetic word of chapter 22, verse 5 from the prophet Gad when he said, go back to Judah. He said, don't go anywhere but Judah. That's where God's telling you, go to Judah, 22:5. So David's going back to Judah because Keilah is Judah. That's one of the cities in Judah. David's men said, look, we are afraid here in Judah. Maybe they were helping him go to Gath. You know, they go, we don't like it in Judah. We feel like that we're open prey to Saul. We're afraid in Judah as well. David says, yeah, the 22:5, the prophecy said, go to Judah. We got to stay here. I already took one little side trip over to the Philistines. And we know later, two sessions from now or three from now, he's going to take another one. He's going to go to the Philistines again. He's going to violate this prophecy and go back to the Philistines. But that's 2 weeks from now. But David said to him, look, we're afraid. David's men said, we're afraid in Judah. How much more, if we're afraid to be in Judah because of Saul, if we go fight Keilah against the Philistines, the Philistines will be in the front. Saul will come from the back. We'll get trapped. They go, no way. No way. He says, that's not our job anyway. Saul's the king of Israel, not you. Saul's supposed to take care of Israel. David says, no. God has commissioned me to fight the Philistines, and my own countrymen are in trouble, and I'm going for it. I love this. He asked of the Lord again. So he's out of his down spin here. David inquired of the Lord again and said, the Lord said, go, attack. I will deliver the Philistines into your hands. Now, Saul was neglecting the public safety of Judah right now. Saul was so, captivated to go after David that he was forgetting the safety of the whole nation. He was consumed with killing David. And so now David's saving the nation. Verse 5. Okay, David and his men went to Keilah, and they fought the Philistines. They struck them with a mighty blow. They took away the livestock. David saved the city of Keilah. And it happened that Abiathar had the ephod, I mean, because they could get some prophetic direction there. Saul was told that David went to Keilah, so Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand. Here's David under prophetic directions to go to Keilah and fight. And Saul, this keeps making me mad, he thinks that God has delivered David into his hands. So Saul calls all the people to war to go down to Keilah to besiege David. I mean, here the Philistines are fighting Keilah, and Saul wants to fight David. I mean, he's not, because remember his mandate in chapter 10 was to fight the Philistines. Well, he don't care about the Philistines. He wants to kill David, so he gets the whole army to go to Keilah to fight to kill David for beating the Philistines. David knew that Saul plotted evil, and he said to Abiathar, bring the ephod here. You know, in other words, the Urim and the Thummim. Let me see what God's going to say. David said, O Lord of Israel, your servant has certainly heard Saul is coming to Keilah. Everybody in the nation knows he's coming to destroy the city because I'm here. He says, will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hands? Will Saul come down? O Lord, I pray, tell your servant. The Lord said, Saul will come down. In other words, they said, will he come down? And the answer had been yes. David said, will these men whom I just delivered their city, will they turn me over? And the Lord said, they will turn you over. They'll turn you over to Saul. And he goes, thanks for telling me. I'm getting out of here then. Now, I think in all fairness, you think, what a bunch of, you know, mean guys. They heard of the Nob massacre. I mean, it was major news in the nation that the city of Nob was massacred, and the nation was beginning to be frightened of Saul. And they were saying, David, there's no way we're going to have our women and children and everything killed. We appreciate what you did, but Saul will mow us down, surround the city. Get out of here. There's no way we can look our children in the face and let them die while you're here. So I don't feel so bad about the Keilah guys, because they could never have stood off Saul, never. So David and his, but of course David had the Spirit of God on him. If they would have locked into that, maybe there would have been that would have really been a showdown, wouldn't it? So David and his men, 600. Now it's grown from 400. Remember in chapter 22:1 was 400. Now it's grown to 600. So he's got 200 more guys in debt that are mad that have joined him. And their families and their children are with him, because we find that later in chapter 27. And they departed from Keilah and went wherever they could go. And it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah, so he halted the expedition. David stayed in the strongholds in the wilderness, remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph. That's Judah as well. That's the wilderness of Ziph is in Judah. Again, the wilderness was just an uncultivated forest as well as mountains. It's not like just a desert. Sometimes there's desert there. The wilderness of Ziph. So Saul sought him every day. Look at this. Saul was relentless. But Saul wouldn't fight the Philistines, but he sought David every day, but God would not deliver him into his hands. So David saw that Saul had come to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. David and Jonathan's last encounter. They make their covenant is basically, and they hug each other and they love each other and they make their covenant. Okay, verse 19. Then the Ziphites, now remember they're Judah people, they're from the region of Judah, came to Saul at Gibeah, and they say, you want to know where David is? We know where he's at. All of Israel loved David, you know. Why do they want to do this? They want Saul to give some of the benefits to their people that he was giving to the Benjamites. This was purely monetary. They was not against David. They says, hey, David, the man's got to eat, you know. It was purely a political and a monetary deal going on, because he wanted the favor of the king. Verse 20 says, you come down and we'll deliver him over to you. That's verse 20. Verse 21, Saul said, blessed are you of the Lord. There's that jargon again. He says, please go out and find out for sure and see the place where he's hiding out and who has seen him where exactly. Listen to this, for I know that he's very crafty. He goes, you get him pinned against the wall because this guy is so good. He goes, I want a lot of people on this case. Verse 23, see therefore and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hides. He goes, find out every cave. He goes, I'll put 100 men on every cave. He goes, every place. And come back to me with certainty. He goes, I've been chasing him. It's getting expensive. For months. It's been years now. I can't get my hands on him. He goes, I went every place. Come with certainty. And then when you know exactly where he's at and you got spies all over the mountains watching every move, then come to me. It shall be that if he's in the land, I will search for him throughout all the clans of Judah. I'll find him. So they arose and went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, this is a very small area, which is also in Judah. So it's all within a 10-mile area, 10 or 15-mile area. But it's hard to find people without the equipment, you know, that they have today. 600 people, yeah. Yeah, well, they didn't like just stay in a mob. They would go to an area and spread out over like an area of a mile or two or three and hide in the caves and the rocks and that kind of stuff. And so it wasn't like they were just standing together huddled, you know, like all walking together. Let's go. You know, David had them over captains of 10, and they would spread out a couple miles and all that kind of stuff. Verse 25. When Saul and his men went to seek him, they told David. They said, David, Saul's coming. I mean, they had all this espionage going on. He's on the very brink of disaster. Everything is impossible. Everything seems possible, impossible to David. I mean, he's trapped. Saul heard of it. There's thousands of men that Saul has with him. They're pursuing David in Maon. So David went on one side of the mountain, Saul did, and David went on the other side. So David made haste to get away from Saul. I mean, they're down to the last mile or two, and there's thousands of men on Saul's team, 600, and they're coming down to the final thing here. And David made haste to get away, for Saul and his men were encircling David all the way around him, because they got him trapped now. But a messenger came to Saul. Quick, quick! The Philistines are invading the land. In other words, they're taking your kingdom. And he goes, no, I can't believe it. And therefore, David returned. He had him in his grasp. The last time he had him in his grasp, you know, the Toronto thing fell on him. And now they got him in their grasp now. And the blessing of God is breaking out. And the Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. They called the place the Rock of Escape. And David went up there to dwell in the strongholds of En-Gedi, and we take it up from there.